Hey guys, this is Laura Vandervoort. I played Kara Kent / Supergirl on Smallville, and you are listening to Always Hold On to Smallville.
Now I've heard there was a secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? Like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of The Young Superman Show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. Until we don't talk about that, because it's another Snyder Cut special number six. Numbers, can you imagine doing six parts of something, stretching that out over that long? Amazing. And we're going to have an epilogue, too. But we're talking about Zack Snyder's Justice League. We're back for another roundtable with one voice you've heard before, Lance Lasseter. What's up, Lance?
What's up?
You know, Lance loves talking about the DCEU, so he had to be part of this. And and we got to welcome back a couple of voices we haven't heard in a long time here on the podcast. We got Mikes, DeMonte, and Krause. What's up, y'all?
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
Yeah. So man, I guess a big reason we want to have y'all back is we talked about BVS together, Ultimate Edition, yep. Justice League. So like this goes way back. And so it's been years. So it's like kind of like a time capsule of the DCU talking to y'all. So yes, you know, if you don't hear people on the podcast anymore, that doesn't mean we're not friends. Just, you know, it's like, what happened to that guy? Yeah, we don't talk about him. But no, they're back here. And then of course we have Mr. Matthew Rocha. What's up, Matt?
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me here.
So I've talked about the Snyder Cut a lot. I will continue to. I think we all will for the rest of our life because being podcasters and whatnot. But I think it'd be interesting here to have this kind of conversation this way. Now, as I understand it, got DeMonte and Rocha are two of the biggest Snyder Universe fans there are. Which is very ironic, because let me just say this. DeMonte and I were friends in college, too. But we were, like, knew each other in college. We weren't, like, friends with it, but we like, worked at the newspaper together and stuff. And the reason we kind of reconnected as friends is because I liked Man of Steel and you hated it. And look at you now. Krause is not so wishy-washy. He hated Man of Steel, and he continues to hate all DCU properties. So good on you. So him and Lance will be on the other side for the big dookaroo here. And I will moderate a little bit. I'll chime in, you know, because you guys know I talk too much on all these things. But I think that's a good – you guys can kind of go back and forth about it. I think that's be a more fun conversation. But I guess where we should start is Snyder Cut. Can we all agree it's better than the theatrical cut of Justice League?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Oh, there we go. Look, we have common ground.
There you go. We can go along. There can be peace on earth.
Yeah. So I think we can all agree about that. I did want to ask, is there anything you miss, any of y'all, from the theatrical cut? Because there's a couple small things that, I mean, they don't matter in the grand scheme of things, but just any little moments, shots, lines, anything that you missed in the theatrical cut that was in the Snyder Cut. There wasn't in the Snyder Cut, I should say.
Shorter runtime.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You missed 2 hours of your life, apparently. Yeah. Yes.
There was one thing I was really surprised that the Whedon cut had that I thought was Snyder, was the ethical debate about bringing back Superman.
I was going to say that, too.
That was it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I like that. I like that was one part that was just a very minor, you know, in such an epic runtime, right? Like that one, like the ethical debate about bringing him back. And I kind of like just Bruce being a little bit more of a jerk to Diana. And
I agree with that.
A little moment. I thought that was fun. And so I missed that little,
Steve Trevor tell you that? That would hit very differently after Wonder Woman 84.
So wait, you mean to tell me that Josh Whedon had some rich, powerful guy writing disrespecting a woman?
God. The thirstiest woman he ever knew. Where the writing was on the wall, right? But so yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, for me, I dig it from Aquaman. I miss that. Like, I dig it. And Commissioner Gordon getting 2 or 3 more lines, which you know, apparently Zack Snyder shot, but he shot it just for the studio, not for himself. But like that line kind of bookended when Aquaman was like, just like a bat, you're out of your mind, Bruce Wayne, right? So I missed that. But I mean, and then really the only other thing was like the shot of Superman opening his eyes when he got resurrected. I thought that was cool. Yeah. Because yeah, in the Snyder cut, he's just floating above the city.
It was a cool moment.
That's really all I can think of. It's crazy to think how your preferences change. Like, because I was like, it's good to see the old Superman back. But I'm like, oh, God, I'm so glad all that cringy stuff is gone. Like, Slowpoke. And anyway, were you going to say something, Roka?
No, I was just going to say, I do miss the red and blue suit. I love the black suit for this. But I would have liked the, you know, when he rips open his shirt, that shot to have been back to the classic red and blue. Mm-hmm. That was something I really liked a lot that I think would have been cool. Like, okay, now we're back to classic Superman look.
Right.
I also like the whole that race moment with him and Flash. I thought was funny. Like, it was a cool little comic booky thing. Like, oh, sorry, Mike.
I completely agree. I think it needed a little bit more red and blue.
Right. Well, and then other than the brunch talk, you're right. The post and Henry Cavill's face, the Superman Flash thing. That's a tradition in comic books, right? I mean, they did it on Smallville. Smallville did it all first. Did the Justice League first, made Cyborg a member of the Justice League, you know, et cetera, et cetera. This is not a Superman 2 situation where you're like, well, there's probably about 30% of the Lester version that's better than the Donner version, right? And the Ultimate version is in between, but these little bits and pieces are not worth, you know, the return that we got for this. So I guess, you know, and Lance, you said your piece on this. Is there anything you want to say off the top? And we'll go around just before we really dig into it here. What were your... Just a nutshell, right? What you thought you were going to think going into this and then what you thought afterward.
What I thought going into it was that this is going to be better than the Justice League, because that's not a high bar to clear. And I was correct in thinking that, because this is better than that. But is this what, you know, a lot of the, you know, Snyder stands out there were making it out to be? Was this like, you know, Citizen Kane? Was this going to change cinema? Was it going to, you know, be the most, was this going to be, you know, the most amazing thing that ever graced our screens? No, it's not that at all. And it's not even the best in the DCEU, I think, in my opinion. And it's the best that Snyder's done and contributed to this universe. But that's also not saying much, because everything else is not that great that he's done.
Fair enough. Krauss, what about you, man? I know you were just waiting to see Zack Snyder's 4-hour vision of your favorite characters.
Yeah, I pretty much I liked it. Compared to the first one, I liked it more. But I still feel a lot of the sins that I hold deep grudges with from Batman versus Superman were just magnified and redone again here.
Okay. Good. We'll dig into that. That'll be fun. DeMonte, man, you were a big supporter of this, and did you get everything you hoped and dreamed from the Snyder Cut?
Yeah, I mean, it was satisfying. I mean, just to, even if, like, you know, one of the things we were talking about, I mean, it was special with me and Lance, was like, even if it sucks, let's just at least have the opportunity to judge it. So just getting that opportunity in the first place, that was really cool. It speaks volumes about, I mean, ultimately, you know, this is something we talked about too, is you get the redemption arc, not only of the characters, but of Zack Snyder, all the stuff he went through. And you hear about all the behind the scenes stuff that's, you know, every week, like, more stuff comes out, you know? So in that sense, it was satisfying just to see that redemption arc play out for just the characters and him. But the movie itself was good. It felt like an event when you have to sit down and watch something for 4 hours. It's like, you're not just watching a movie, you're taking your time out of your day. And it just felt like an event. All the hype, all that stuff kind of went to the enjoyment factor of viewing.
Totally. And Rocco, what about you, man?
Well, I love that Mike said that about events, because I messaged Zach afterwards and said, I just had a religious experience. It really was like a big event thing to me, and it was really great. And I'm in actually kind of a minority in terms of position of these movies, because as Zach has known from some of these episode I've been on, I love Man of Steel. I love BVS in a way that a lot of people are divided about or feel like they like it or whatever, but they're not sure about it. I loved it. It was one of my favorite comic book movies of all time. And then when we got the theatrical cut of Justice League, I really enjoyed it. Actually, I had a really fun time. It just, I know there was some, like, you know, there were flaws and there were the things that we make fun of and stuff, but it was to me like a really fun popcorn comic book movie. And I was like, okay, like that was fun. And then when to hear the evolution of this and to hear there was so much more and there were so many deeper layers and that Zack Snyder was doing that he had, because, you know, none of us knew the full story. And to then hear like he had such a bigger scope and plan for the characters and all these different arcs that were planned out, and to hear more about that as the evolution went on was such an exciting prospect for me as a fan and as a filmmaker too, just to hear that about a director's cut in a way where it was a whole other cut and find all that stuff out. So when I saw it, I was just blown away by how not only the comic book fan stuff that we love, but the filmmaking aspects of what Zach was doing and how you could take two scenes of the same kind of structure and compare and contrast them with music and cinematography and how that changes the tone completely. So I just was like, wow, I want to just teach a college class on film. I teach high school right now, but I teach a college class on film and just play the two and side by side and have like comparisons and contrasts and how do those things, you know, stylistically make a huge difference, even if it's like 10 seconds more of dialogue or 10 seconds more holding on a character's face.
Lots of 10 seconds more throughout all this. Lots
of that. 10.
Yeah. No, but hey, and you're in a great position to do it. I said, like, man, I wish I could just become a professor and show people these films. And then the assignment is edit it all together and bring it to me, like the Robin. Yes. Because that's one, because I really enjoyed it. It's my favorite of the DCU, but it is, I think it's too long, to be honest. Like, I think it is an assembly cut. We've talked about this, right? But I understand why, because it's like, look, we want to stretch this out. We want to make it an event. This could be the last thing he ever gets to do with the DC, period. Like, I want to put everything, he wants to put everything he shot onto the screen, so I get that. But I think there were a lot of, as much as we're saying we don't need the theatrical cut anymore, I think there's a lot of interesting ways you could take all this material and reassemble it in certain ways. That's what I love about you, Roka. You have such interesting thoughts about stuff. You loved Man of Steel and BVS, and then also liked Justice League. So I don't want to go down this rabbit hole too far, but Star Wars sequel trilogy. Did you like The Last Jedi?
I'm in a weird position there too, because I know
I ask you because it seems like you'd be the kind of guy that likes Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker. That's why I go there. You know what I mean?
That I probably would be that person, but here's where I'm weird. Here's where I'm in a weird position there. As much of a film aficionado and comic book nerd and all that, you know, all that stuff, I only recently really started diving into the Star Wars movies.
Okay.
So that's where I'm in a weird position. I can't quite compare and contrast yet. We do this thing at the school I work at called Shakespeare Festival, where we put it in a different time period than Shakespeare's normal stuff. And last year we did sci-fi. So I went and I started watching the classic Star Wars, and I was like, wow, this is what I've been missing. Like, everyone's been telling me all my life this, you know, so I'm in that weird position. So I'll get back to you as I dive into the newer films and then compare and contrast. That's remember the whole, I don't remember the title, but I remember the, the whole Rise of, Rise of Darth,
Revenge of the Sith, the prequels. Yeah.
That came out right after Smallville commencement. I remember going there it is. With my friends and being like, oh, Rise of Lex Luthor, Rise of Darth Vader at the same time.
That's cool, man. Yeah, so I guess the way to kind of just, we can all like discuss it and have some sort of structure here, it'd be fun, is just to kind of like debate the merits of, you know, particular topics or subjects. And I think the main one to start out with would be Superman, because he's kicked off this DCEU. This movie is about his resurrection, his return here. You know, it's tough because, like, we could spend all day just on that particular topic. But I guess, DeMonte, let's start with you, man. You enjoyed this movie. What was your thoughts on the interpretation of Superman? You and Roka, sell us on why Superman was great in this movie, and then Lance and Krauss can tell us why he wasn't, perhaps.
All right, so one of the things I want to do is I want to plug, I want to do a cheap plug too. So I know we're going to talk about this further on in a full-on episode, but my last book, Stranger Than Fiction, one of the things I explore is kind of how Superman is viewed in the Snyder movies, right, as his Jesus figure. And long story short, the comparison I make is from, you know, obviously the comparison with Jesus, right? And one of the guys I quote is an author, professor, his name's Peter LaVenda, and he's written a lot of books about, like, history, occultism, UFOs, like he does all that stuff. And he's just really a genius guy. And the depictions he was making about Jesus was very similar to how Snyder chose to portray Superman, right? If an alien being came down from the sky right now, how would humanity view him? And I thought Snyder was doing that take, even Man of Steel and Batman or Superman, was pretty genius, because you are getting a more realistic view than would be viewed in society. Just look how people who are different, who are different in general, are treated historically, right? Based upon the color of their skin or their orientation. So the idea that if a super being came down from space, that he would be embraced, I think, especially nowadays, I don't think that would be the case. I think Snyder doing that, I think, was really separated DC from Marvel in that sense. And I'm not taking any away from the Marvel films either. It was just, you know, a different tone and direction. And Warner Brothers didn't double down. That was the thing. They tried to, you know, fit Marvel's formula, rather saying, hey, you know what, we're doing something a little bit different here, let's embrace it and let's ride it.
Cool. So that worked for you. That's what you connected to this version of Superman with. And so what turned you around on Man of Steel, though?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Man, I don't think it was just executed well. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a bad movie. I'm not a Superman guy like you guys. Like, I'm a Batman guy at first, but I just thought, I don't know. It's, you know, there's certain things that they try to shove in your face too much. Like, okay, we get it. We know what he's, you know, like the part where, you know, Kevin Costner is like, don't save me, son. And it's like, oh, come on. Like, it's like, save your dad. Who cares if people know you're Superman at that point? But no, it was like little things like that. I just, you know, I think the scope was good. I just think it was executed as well.
Okay.
But I mean, I like Batman vs Superman. I thought, you know, I thought it doubled down on that vision, the idea of, you know, Superman. Yeah, the ramifications of, you know, Superman in a real world, how it would work kind of social, you know, not just in society, but geopolitically and culturally. So I thought, you know, that carried over. And, you know, just like, you know, the whole part of it too is, you know, the redemptions of these characters, right? And that's why I'm glad Snyder was able to finish his vision, because all the criticisms of the characters in the other films, you kind of see it in this film and rise up, right? You kind of see Superman being kind of more like the Superman that, you know, people in the comics, you know, were expected. And you see Bruce Wayne learn the error in his ways, finally. Hmm.
All right, Roka, what do you have to add to that for Team Snyder Superman here?
Well, that was really well said, Mike. Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. I felt like the way that, to me, one of the most interesting aspects, maybe the most interesting aspect of this, Snyder's universe and everything, is the Superman bit. And to me, it's kind of what Mike was talking about what would society do with such a figure in real life. And we see how we're divided about the most ridiculous things sometimes nowadays, and that causes people to wage war upon one another, right? And so if we had something like Superman, like, that seems to me like such a very interesting question and a realistic depiction that Snyder was showing us of, part of the point is the frustration that we feel as Superman fans. That's how I feel about it. The frustration, we're like, oh, come on, like, he's Superman. Like, we should all be just embracing and loving this guy. We all know that, right? But as Superman fans, we come to it with that expectation. We know that already. And I like that Snyder questioned the expectation of, well, the real world, if there was no Superman, you know, story, the real world wouldn't know what to think of this person. Some people would love him. Some people would hate him. Some people would think he's a god. Some people would think he's a demon. And where would, you know, what would this do to our world? What would they think about that? And I feel the whole death in BVS, I know a lot of people believe that it was too soon, and I totally get that.
Too soon.
I was just gonna quote that too. but I love, see, to me, it was actually an ingenious way to do the whole death and resurrection story before Superman became a figure that everybody loved. I really thought that was brilliant because it was even more paralleling the Jesus story, where Jesus was still in many circles reviled, and many people just thought of him as this like crazy rebel, let's crucify him, you know, and then he died. And then when he came back, the world really, you know, the world saw who he was, and the religion was formed around him. It wasn't until after the death. And I thought that was really cool that Snyder did the same thing there with Superman, that the world was torn on him and people didn't all love him. He died, and then the world saw what his beautiful sacrifice was and embraced who he was. And it was kind of almost too late. And there was that darkness and despair. But when he came back, it was like Mike said, he was more true to his comic book self, because I think he had that hope that the world had seen who he really was, and he was back not just like physically stronger, but like spiritually stronger to come in and, you know, not only save the Justice League, but to be like part of a team instead of him just having that burden of the person with power is the only person with power. So he got to be part of that team with them. The only thing I would have liked to have seen is even more screen time with them together, but I mean, it's a 4-hour movie, so I think
so there's only so much time. There's only so much time.
And I really liked what we got in that only so much time.
I respect your points of view on this, because I'm like, this is some good stuff. I feel like a lot of it gets lost in the translation sometimes, or perhaps the execution, perhaps. And then plus you balance that with what we've like all seen before and what we're bringing to it with Superman. Right. And so it just, I guess, you know, that's where I stand on it. You know, like I find that's really like a valid interpretation. Like I've even come to, you know, dare I say, appreciate what they were doing with Lex Luthor, although it's not really the one I wanted. You know, so yeah, those are all factors floating around with Superman. But I see, yeah, you guys have identified this journey and you connect with it, and I get that. So, and this Justice League paid that off for you. So I toss it over to Team, not Snyder, Superman, Lance and Cross. Lance, what is your response to these beautifully explained ideas, why you disagree?
Well, I disagree in the sense that, well, first of all, I don't think that, like, Superman's barely in this movie, right? And the Superman, so like, how could we glean a lot of the things that you're talking about from somebody who's has barely any you know, appearance or weight on what's going on in the story that he's telling? And the Superman that we've seen so far is not Superman. That's the other part of it. It's like, you know, does Snyder even like this character? Because he doesn't capture him, and he doesn't seem to get it. You know, that's a common criticism laid at people that, you know, don't like things or have a disagreeable type of opinion. Like, oh, you just didn't get it. Well, in this case, like I would, you know, I put out there to the world, is like, well, does Snyder get it? Right? Because like, and does he get Superman's importance and how getting his characterization correctly matters and what that means? I stated in our other podcast that in the roundtable that Snyder's his obsession and his need to only want to do deconstruction type stories and delve into that with these types of characters does him a disservice, especially in this case, because he's so interested in deconstructing, you know, the superhero myth and the mythology, and in particular with Superman, that he forgets to do any sort of construction with the character. And I think Superman is a character that is his function in things is to be used as the construction type, right? You can use the deconstructing Superman, you know, thing. You can use that with the Boys. You can use that with Invincible. You can use that with all these other things. But but Superman exists to remind us that if somebody came down and was good and was pure of heart and did want to do a thing and do the right thing, that can't exist. And then what we see with this Superman is not that at all. The other aspect that you mentioned with, you know, the Jesus allegory that he like repeatedly bludgeoned us over the head with, like throughout like this entire run, it's like, we get it, even though it started off as a Moses allegory, but that's a different discussion for a different day. So you have that, but then also like Snyder's obsession with, like, you know, in this in this DCEU is like, oh, well, these are gods, these are modern gods, and I'm going to, you know, portray them as such. It's like, well, yes, but again, I ask, is like, do you get it? Because like the gods that he's talking about in particular, in how he's portraying them, are like, you know, the Greek gods, right? Because we often have said that, you know, superheroes and these characters are our modern mythology, are our modern thing. Well, the thing with them is they were almost more human than the humans were, and that's the whole point of their stories, is to teach about humanity. And in a lot of the cases in this, while they are flawed, they were not necessarily, you know, they didn't show any humanity in them. They just showed them as flawed people. And I think that, you know, there was no balance involved in his characterization of some of the characters and how some of the arcs were played out. So it was, you know, lacking balance, and then the execution of some of his ideas and his visuals did not come through.
So what you're saying is not impressed. That's what you're saying. Krauss, man, I know that you and I, we have a deep love for the Christopher Reeve Superbad, right? Do you feel like that has do we have Reeve blinders on, or is it beyond that of why we haven't embraced the Henry Cavill Superman? Because as much as I enjoy the Justice League and all that, like I've said, like, you know, the Superman aspects are like my least favorite parts of the DCEU. And that's why, you know, he's in, like Lance said, he's barely in the movie. So that's great for me. But he did come back. It was good. But is that what your barrier is, Krauss? Or what are some of your barriers to embracing interpretation?
You make a very good point. I mean, perhaps I am spoiled by Richard Donner's original.
Where he was also Jesus, just for the record, everyone. So.
Maybe that's a bar for me that's so high that it's not reasonable for me to compare it to these movies. But I just felt like, at least with comparing it to that movie, I felt like there were actual stakes at that movie. And whereas this, I mean, I feel like the stakes went out the window as soon as they killed Superman in Batman versus Superman. And so now I feel like, from the moment the movie starts, I know Superman's coming back. So what are the stakes if that's going to happen?
Well, Batman could die.
Well, and he kind of did, but I don't know if we want to get that far ahead yet.
Oh, okay. What would have been in that one? Yeah. Despite the new, like, as Zack Snyder intended version of Justice League for Lance and Krauss, right? You're still not sold on the Superman arc or the story. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. And here's the thing, right? We needed more movies with the Superman. I think we definitely needed more story with him before this, in my opinion. And then knowing where they were going to go with it also concerns me, because I'm not interested in seeing like the arc get paid off. Oh, well, he's evil Superman now. I'm like, no. Now, and if DC allowed the multiverse to exist, like they claim they do, but they don't, but they claim they do, then that'd be fine. Have your thing over here, and then we'll have our thing over there, and then there's five Supermans, and that's great. But because there just seemed to be this one-at-a-time mentality, thank God for Superman and Lois, right? Because I think that's been a big unifying thing, and everybody seems to respond well to that. But do more stuff like that, and I think this kind of stuff would be more palatable. Like, okay, you can play your Injustice video game over here, and I'll watch Superman 3 over here, right? And so there's, you know, Smallville's over there. And if that was the way, I think there'd be less of this just, we gotta plant our flag, and I'm team so-and-so, you know? I think we all have a good time talking about it, right? But there's a lot of places out there on the internet that are not so fun to discuss these things and hash them out. So I really appreciate all you guys' points of view on it, and I see them all. So that's where we are on Superman. I guess, I know we can talk about just the Justice League itself, right? As a team, I think one of the huge, and maybe we all do agree on this, I'm not sure, but I think one of the huge pluses of this version was the team worked as a team. Like everyone had an objective. Everybody had, like, especially the end battle, like the Flash, who was just the rookie joke of the Justice League. He was the guy who saves the universe at the end of this movie, right? And I thought that was really cool. Again, as we talked about, Lance, in our other podcasts, like, this should be movie 10, because how do you go back from that? How do you do a Flash movie now when he already saved existence as we know it, right? I don't know, yeah. Right? Krauss, let's start with you, man. What did you think of the Justice League as, like, the team in this version?
I will concede I did like that part. I wish there was more actual Superman, but I did like I did like the team aspect. I love the cyborg part of it. I think that was a mistake to cut a lot of that story out, because that made the team working together even more entertaining to me, just knowing where he came from and how he was going to help them.
Yeah, because it wasn't just, I have to hold these boxes apart at the end. It was like, there were so many fronts the battle is being fought on at the end, instead of just like, let's fight the parademons and this Russian family, you know. But there you go, Lance. How's the team, like, you know, being we're all fans of the DCAU here, like that's like the gold standard for all things DC, right? Not that this team would measure up to that team, because it's like the Reeve comparison of Superman, it's kind of unfair, but you know, what are your thoughts on the Justice League here as the team, and did they sell you this time more so than the theatrical version?
Yeah, they sold me this time, but I guess like my one, you know, but to that is what, like, why was that so hard? Like, why, like, again, like, why, like, why, like, that again, we have such a low bar. It's like, why are we celebrating the fact that they did something that the Fox movies did with the X-Men from the first movie, right? Same thing with the Avengers.
Well, like, that Cyclops was their Superman and they misunderstood him and ruined him as well. So,
no, they did, but as far as the team working together in the first X-Men movie, they did do that.
Work as a team, right?
So, same thing with all these other team up movies that we've seen, and so yet, like, we get to this movie just like, oh, I just like how in this movie they worked as a team. It's like, well yeah, of course they did, like, that's what they're supposed to do. So like we shouldn't reward, you know, things that are like that should be minimum expectations.
Well, my point with that, and it's, if you look at the theatrical version, they removed all, because what's the thing about the Justice League? Well, Superman could do like all this stuff anyway, right? And like, they just, hey, we're all running around and saving and fighting, like, but here, as originally intended, like, everyone had their purpose, right? And I think that's when you do these team ups, everybody has to have a purpose, unless people are redundant.
That's all fine and good, but I'm just saying that, like, other IPs have managed to do the team working together, everybody has a purpose, everybody has a role to play in the greater good thing. Like, they managed to do it without it being like, oh, did you see how we did this? Like, it's like, no, they just did it, right? Like, so it shouldn't be like this hallmark that we're like, you know, that we're hoisting upon this pedestal because they figured out how to make the Justice League work as a team. It's like, no, that's inherent with this project.
Well, not everything can be Power Rangers, so, you know.
Yeah, well, look, they've been doing it correctly for 30 years, so.
I know, it's that, them and Ninja Turtles, right? I know what you mean. Like, they've been working together without any problems for several years, and Raphael didn't have to turn evil and kill everyone in the alternate future, so.
Exactly.
But Roka, you know, I know you love this movie, so what was part of some of your favorite component of the team aspect of it all?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, I definitely feel like the teamwork, like you said, Zach, was it was very well done. Like, you could really see, like you said, there was a clear objective for each character and their arc. And I get where Lance is coming from of like, oh, you know, but a lot of movies do that. And but that being said, in my opinion, it's kind of how I judge blockbuster movies in a way, where I could say, oh, well, a lot of movies do this kind of seemingly surface level simplistic thing, you know, on the surface, but do they all do it well? And like, in my opinion, this one did it very well, where you could really see how each character functions. And I also think that the actors have a real chemistry with each other. And I think that was even apparent in the theatrical, even with so much stuff that was cut. Like, I feel like they have a great chemistry, and you can tell, kind of like in Smallville Justice League, you can tell they have fun with each other, probably both behind the scenes and on camera. And there's, I feel like that chemistry always shines through. And with this, we just got to see more of like how each character functions, and each character is responsible for saving the world at the end. And it wasn't just Superman coming and being cool. It was like all of them having their separate function and being able to do that. The Flash, of course, being the most obvious example of an upgrade of what he was up to in the climax. And I actually would even say, you know, there's that part in theatrical that everyone makes fun of with, of course, you know, I just push some people and run away. And like, everyone, you know, makes fun of rookie Flash there. I would put an interesting opinion out there, which is that moment maybe could have worked better if we had this ending. Like, you have really rookie Flash at the beginning who doesn't really know what he's doing. He's kind of afraid. Mm-hmm. And Batman tells him, just save one. and then he starts saving everybody and he's liking it and he's like, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do. And then you have the ending where Flash is largely responsible for saving the entire world.
I like that arc, and I've heard people actually mention, and I think I might agree with them about like that they could have left that in. I don't know who shot that particular exchange, but like the fact that Batman is the one like, hey, save one. I'm like, that's a, yeah, I mean, his arc being a hero. But Lance, I know that you have a, looks like you want to respond there. So what are your thoughts?
Okay, yeah. Well, no, like, again, I agree with you, Rogue. Like everything that we see like steals from everybody. Everybody steals each other's plays, right? But to your point of like, you know, we get like, you know, like, everybody does it, but not everybody does it well. I mean, that is also true. But like, again, we've seen, you know, the things that we're, you know, highlighting here, the teamwork aspect, done better in other places. Like the, like what you're talking about, like in, like where you see, well, everybody, you know, has a role and it fits with their arc. I mean, look at the Fast and the Furious franchise. They've done it 9 times, right? Like, so again, like this isn't something that like should be lauded as like some new concept, right?
Well, especially, but when I don't think that's it. What anybody's doing. I think we're, I mean, to be fair, I think we're just happy to finally see the characters we love our mm-hmm. whole lives doing it together in live action on screen. Yeah, I think that's where that comes from.
No, I agree. But my point is like that's like, it shouldn't have taken this long, right? And that's, and it's such a low bar. Like there are things to compliment with the you know, the Snyder Cut and the DCAU. Like, I mean, like I can give compliments to the things that, you know, in my opinion, deserve compliments to. But like, one of the things I'm not going to compliment them on is a bare minimum expectation of getting the Justice League together.
I just wanted to put one example out there because I get exactly what you're saying. This is just an example that came to my head because yesterday I was on like a movie bender with my brother, and it just reminds me of what you're talking about, Lance. Mm-hmm. We were in a shark mood. So we were watching like shark movies, and we watched Jaws 3, okay. Which is a terrible, terrible movie.
Okay, good. All right, I was concerned where you're going with that.
Good, you're out of here, this podcast. No, it was a terrible, terrible, terrible movie. But here's the funny thing. Then I was going back and I was looking at some, just thinking about the original Jaws, right? The first one, Steven Spielberg. And some of the things I was thinking about that movie did really well, by compare and contrast, were things that could almost be like, you could think of them as almost simplistic formula things, like giving the characters reason to talk to one another, giving each character a little bit of a quirk that you get to like the characters, making them more important than just the shark, you know, just those things that are like, oh, well, duh, like that's obvious filmmaking 101 stuff. But at the same time, to me, it doesn't take away from, like, it's a simple formula, but it's done really well in Jaws 1, and it's done really poorly in Jaws 3. And I guess that's what I'm coming from, is like, you can see how this one, in my opinion at least, did that really simple formula, but did it well. And okay. A lot of movies don't do it well. I guess that's where I'm coming from.
And, you know, something we've all touched on is Superman not being around, and usually he's one of the former members of the Justice League. This time around, Batman does it. So, Devante, you're the Batman guy. You and Lance are both Batman guys. But, you know, you worship the altar of Chris Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy, and, you know, this is a different interpretation of Batman. I prefer this interpretation of Batman, but how do you feel about Batman, like, forming the team, making the team, being the quarterback of this Justice League, so to speak?
I think that's part of the thing you talked about earlier about the team. I think the journey of getting the team together is some of the best scenes, you know, of Bruce Wayne, out there recruiting, because it goes back to his arc of seeing his Batman or Superman. He's trying to make the world better. He sees what he did, and even though, like, I wish Superman was in the movie more, you feel him throughout the movie. Right? The movie starts with showing the how the world reacted when Superman died. So it's like, even though you don't see Superman, you feel him. Mm-hmm. And
that, I wish 15 minute scream. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wish we could have had him more than 15 minutes. But no, just the fact that, his legacy kind of lives on. You kind of see that change in Bruce. You know, Bruce wants to be better for him. You know, he wants to kind of, you know, he made that promise on his grave, right, to do better. So, and, mm-hmm. you know, this is thing. Yeah, Bruce does is to get this team together. You know, that kind of, you know, once again, is part of that redemption arc. So I thought that was one of the more enjoyable aspects of watching Bruce Wayne go out and try to recruit and build this team, basically in the name of Superman, right? And then once they actually bring him back, you know, everyone's in agreement that, you know, once Superman comes back, you know, the team will be complete. You know, it's not Superman without him.
Yeah, you unite the seven. Yeah.
Yeah, you unite the seven.
Although there's only six, but please continue.
That kind of goes on the point that they make, too, that how come they haven't invaded Earth since, right? Because Cyborg had a mother box, and they didn't come now, but as soon as Superman was dead, now it was safe. So, you know, that really kind of brings back to the importance of Superman that you feel in the movie. You may not necessarily see it, but I think I think Bruce kind of relays that throughout the film.
I like what you said there. I'm going to respond to that, and we can spin off to another discussion point, because something else you said is something we can delve into. But I like this evolution of Bruce Wayne. Ben Affleck is probably my favorite on-screen Batman. Michael Keaton's the one of my childhood, right? So they're like A and B to me. But anyway, seeing the evolution of him is cool, because I am sick and tired of rookie Batman, right? We've been there. We've done that. I'm not interested in the Batman. All right. I'm just not anymore. I want to see a veteran Batman who has done stuff. And there is a character progression here. I love like his stuff with Alfred. I love that. Right. It's like, this is Alfred. I work for him. Right. It's like, that might be my favorite line of the movie. Right. But that kind of shows how he's changed. And yeah, it's very in character for Bruce Wayne to make ridiculous pledges on people's graves and go to ridiculous lengths to see them through. Right. That's in character for him. Ideally, everyone's alive when they form the Justice League, okay? But, you know, Superman's not around, Batman has to lead the charge. And sometimes it's more interesting to see the people that aren't really qualified to put the team together. And clearly he's not, and he's failing at the very beginning, right? So what you said about, you know, the mother boxes and Superman, let's talk about that. I think that's kind of a plot hole in the movie, to be honest, because Superman was not around for like 30,000 years or whatever, and they didn't invade. I'm not entirely sure. But, I mean, even the explanations of why Darkseid lost Earth and life, that's very muddy. I love seeing Darkseid in live action for the second time after Smallville, because we did it first. yeah, hey, got to give it to the DCU. They did Darkseid just a little bit better than Smallville did. It was not zombie John Glover and Smokeside, as they call him, right? Smallville's reach exceeded its grasp, as they say, when they tried to do Darkseid. But hey, no, I think all the Apocalypse stuff like was great. I love that the Lord of the Rings prologue scene, as I've started to call it. But the whole anti-life thing equation, being on Earth and they forgot it, and the mother box is opening up. Roka, can you explain to us how that makes sense? Give it your best shot.
Okay, I will admit that was very confusing to me, okay, too.
And it's good.
Common ground. Yeah, I've rewatched it several, you know, I mean, in bits and pieces, not the whole, I wish I had the time to watch the whole thing, but I've rewatched bits and pieces over and over. That part confused me for sure. I remember when I was sitting with my, I went out to visit my mom and dad we made this whole event of it, you know, and we watched and stuff. Actually, it was pretty funny. I did, I got my second COVID vaccination on that day, and I canceled all my classes that day in case I was not feeling well. Mm-hmm. And I told the nurse, I was like, you know what I'm doing? Snyder Cut. And she had no idea what I was talking about. So we watched the whole thing at once, and watching it all at once, we were all a little like that moment when it cuts to Steppenwolf on, when he's finding the anti-life and all that, like we were kind of confused, like, wait, what happened? Did he get banished again? Yeah. Or like, what's happening here? And then of course, you know, being as a comic book person, I was like, then they say anti-life, I'm like, oh, okay. Like I get where they're going with it, but I still don't really have an explanation. I thought it was like kind of what Mike was saying about, you know, like after Superman died, that opened up the wormhole for the force of evil to come. But I get also like Zach, big point you said there, like Superman hasn't been around for 30,000 years. So like what, the only thing I could think was that maybe, I don't know if this has any credence or not, or if there was maybe something else Snyder was going to attempt to do with this, but I thought maybe it was something to do with Lex and with communing with Steppenwolf and BVS. Like maybe there was some reason.
That would have been a very obvious connection they just didn't make for some reason. Yeah.
Well, I think actually they could have, you know what? How much I'm a big fan.
Ding 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 ding.
I was gonna say, you know what a big fan I am. They could have, yeah, they could have, because I know the original storyboards. I think there was like stuff in it with Lex Luthor and his in Arkham and like symbols that he had been writing.
Symbols.
And there was like symbols. I found you writing these with a corkscrew.
Yeah.
Wasn't I creative? But So yeah, yeah, maybe that could have been something. I mean, that's the only thing I could think of, and
it's
I
only, it's the only flaw of the film, no doubt. So, but no, I feel like so Krauss, I mean, you know enough comics, you can pick up what they're putting down with the Annie Life and the Mother Boxes and watch enough decent. But still, like, what did you take from that? Like, why did Darkseid and Steppenwolf invade at this moment?
I don't know. I was so confused by just the Steppenwolf teleporting thing. Like he seemed like he could get to the Amazon one fine, but for some reason he can't get to the one that Cyborg had, but he could at one point, but then he couldn't before that. I was confused by that.
Well, it wasn't awake.
Oh, it wasn't awake.
Yeah.
Okay.
Look, man. Look, you only have 4 hours to work with. You can't explain every last. Wow, you guys are asking too much.
It's like, you know, all the things. Yeah, all the things you guys have kind of mentioned would make more sense. As, you know, Roka, like, you know, like him communing with Lex is what like drew them there. But like, I think we're forgetting that, like, when in the, you know, the Lord of the Rings sequence at the, you know, where, like flashback sequence, right? When Darkseid jumps out of his ship and lands into the ground, his, you know, symbol or a symbol shows up on the ground when he hits it, right? And then we end up seeing that again when Steppenwolf has his vision. And he's just like, oh, anti-life, he's on Earth. So that means that when Darkseid arrived on Earth the first time, that means he knew that it was there, which is why he was going there, right? So how did he forget where Earth was for like 30,000 years, right? Makes no sense. For somebody
I just threw that number out. I'm not sure how many thousands of years it was.
I'm throwing that number out as well. So like if Darkseid's sole goal in his life is to find the anti-life equation and he found it, right? And then he goes to invade that planet so he can acquire, like wipe out that life, acquire that, and so he can go on with his schemes. But it doesn't work out that way. He gets his ass beat, and then he has to go back home, right? You would think that as soon as he healed up, he would come right back. But apparently he didn't. But then, and so this whole thing is like, oh, no Kryptonians here. It's like, there wasn't a Kryptonian there the first time. Like, so why would that even be of a concern to you, right? So the way that they should have figured out, like, where, like, you know, where they were, where the mother boxes were, or where Earth was or something, if he somehow forgot in all this time, which also makes no sense, like, is, you know, Dr. Miles Dyson messing with the mother box and awakening. Yeah. That should have been the trigger, right? So yeah. Another reason why they shouldn't have cut out Miles Dyson and all that stuff with Cyborg, right? Because you could have done something with that and use that as
if only that. If only they had, like, let's just say that they let him film a couple more scenes, right? Let's just say, like, you know, just in theory, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that'd been cool to flesh that out.
Yeah.
So I'm of course referring to the fact that they completely wasted the extra time and money they had, but we'll put a pin in that. I've seen Snyder explain it on Vero. I don't have a Vero account, but I've seen people, you know, retweet it on social media, and he's like, Darkseid was hurt, and by the time he got back, everyone else that was with him was killed. I was like, this sounds like some spin, y'all. This sounds like you clearly didn't think this through. That's fine that you didn't. Just admit that you didn't. Right? That's my deal.
You should have said
kind of the DCU in a nutshell.
He forgot.
Yeah, he got a concussion. Man, CTE, man. It's a very serious topical issue. So,
Tell the truth, Zack Snyder.
That's a concussion Will Smith reference, by the way.
Yes, it is.
So, yeah, no, I love that whole sequel, other than Gal Gadot's narration, which was, I love Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman, but there was another take of that, you know, you guys know what I'm saying? Like, it seemed very like, they just handed her that page, and like, hey, we need to record this right now. Could you have a minute? You know?
That sequence is great. Like, I love the first attempted invasion by Darkseid. I love that whole sequence, and they're coming together to fight him. I love that. That's great.
Green Lantern, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was epic. That was such an epic.
The old gods fighting. I mean, that's awesome. I mean, that's the cool mythology stuff that I'm still waiting to see Wonder Woman be involved with, right? I've killed things from other worlds before. Can I see her fight
see
a Hydra or a Centaur? Or not a Cyclops, I guess. Centaur. Yeah.
Or Cerberus or something.
Skeleton army, you know, a sea monster. Like, this is what I want to see Wonder Woman do. So instead of, well, what happened to Wonder Woman 1984. But for more thoughts on that, you know, check out our Patreon. You know, Demonte, right? Darkseid. Darkseid, as you like to call him. Any thoughts on the whole apocalypse angle here?
You know, I agree. I think that was definitely a plot hole. It's like, they could have just left that part out, but with the anti-life equation in general, and explore that in a different film. But yeah, I think that was definitely kind of a plot hole that stood out. But I think in general, it was pretty cool that we got to see him on screen. You know, the fact that he was cut from the original film and, you know, they were working towards building, you know, this potential, you know, three film arc, that, you know, he's going to play a large part of. But just, you know, if this is all we get of him, it was still pretty cool, I think, to see what could have been.
You know? Well, it's more par for the course for DC, where it's like, you know, if you hadn't screwed around, Darkseid would have been on screen before Thanos, like in the proper versus the T, right? Or if you would have made Justice League Mortal 14 years ago, right, you would have totally beat the MCU to this stuff, but you're like, oh, I don't know, Chris Nolan said no, we can't do it. So anyway,
one of the things I was going to add to that was kind of something earlier about how, you know, like the team element, how like Lance had a great point. It's like, yeah, this is the easiest thing that they could do is show them working together. And yeah, I agree with that for sure. But one thing, just in general, you know, the more we read about all this stuff's coming out, that, you know, sounds like Warner Brothers never really had a plan. Snyder did. All along, he had a plan, but Warner Brothers didn't. And I think that really
bad plan.
That really hurt all the other films.
It's all part of the plan.
Like, Chris Terrio said he didn't even know anything about the Wonder Woman film.
Chris Terrio wrote the line, somehow Palpatine return. All right, so I'm not really...
he did?
WB screwed over a lot of people, but like I'm not gonna go to Chris Terrio's defense. Co-writer of The Rise of Skywalker. But I see what you're saying.
No, but the point he was making was valid, right? How you're writing this film and trying to build a universe where the company is, the corporation is not communicating with you, what can and can't happen. So I think I think we got the best Justice League film we could have gotten, I think, with all things considered. They weren't doing things Marvel way. They said, you know what, we're going to rush it. We're going to put them all on screen once and then go, then break them to the individual films. That's what they decided to do. And then Snyder's vision was ultimately the best we could have got, I think, based upon the circumstances that were given.
Now, let's toss it over to the non-Snyderverse fans, so to speak. So Krauss, right? Let me ask you guys, you and Lance, even though you didn't like what they were putting out, would you have preferred they stay the course to see it through, to see if maybe it all tied together and came back around at the end? Or do you think they should have kept trying to patch and meddle and do what they did? Krauss, what do you think?
I just don't see why they would. If they saw it wasn't working with Batman versus Superman, why not do what Marvel's doing? Why not at that point, let's put on the brakes, let's get the solo films out first, concentrate more on the characters, build those up. Because I think one of the larger complaints about Batman versus Superman, at least the original cut, was that there wasn't enough character development. So why not put on the brakes, focus on that? That's what Marvel's doing. Marvel's rolling in cash. Why not do that?
Well, the problem with they're so WB is so reactionary, right? I'm like, it made like, look, I walked out of the theater. I wasn't the biggest fan of BVS, and I've come to like it more and more, mainly for Batman and Wonder Woman, you know, because Superman's my favorite character, the irony of it all. But like, it made $850 million, right? Critically very divided, but you got to ignore the noise, right? A lot of the times. And just like, they just should have, Justice League was already in production. So leave that one alone. But to your point, Krauss, let Justice League play out and then sit and reassess. Don't make them remake the movie when it was done already. So I think, you know, making that so inconsistent with what had come before, it completely threw a grenade in anything they could have done before and after, you know? So what about you, Lance? Would you have liked to see them just see things through, or did you want them to hit the shut it down button? I know that's your thing.
Yes, that's what I say to y'all all the time. Shut it down, let's go home. But in this case, based on everything that we know, I think I would have rather them just go through with whatever their original plan was. And by the trajectory that they were currently on, it was going to end up still not being great. And then they could reassess at that point. So that way we could have saved ourselves, you know, 10 years of all this extra drama and nonsense.
Civil War without end.
That has gone on in the fandom about all this stuff. And they could have shut it down, had, you know, reassessed and come up with a plan of how they were going to improve themselves. Because at that particular time, if they would have done that, like, we would have had Man of Steel, BVS, Suicide Squad, and then, ugh, like, if we were going to go through with Justice League, like, we could have stopped there, and then that could have been a good point to be like, you know what? Man of Steel was all right. BVS sucks. And Suicide Squad is total garbage. And we had this Justice League movie that might have been, at this point, from what we just saw with the Snyder Cut, was what they originally intended. That was okay. So How are we going to improve upon this? That would have been a good time to do that.
Oh, and let's save $300 million from reshooting everything, right?
Yeah.
As well, right? It's
exactly.
I agree. It just, and that's why everything is so like, it's such a minefield of discussion, right? Because it's so much to unpack. We can't just talk about, oh, that movie was better than the other one. It's like, well, the studio changed this, and then you play this what if game all day long, right? And that's why we're stuck where we are.
Well, and the thing is, like, yeah, the studio plays a part, but so did the people making the stuff at the same time. Like, everybody had a hand in this, right? And it's easy to probably, you know, point, you know, to draw a line in the sand and pick a side, but everybody contributed to this, right? And I know the people, like, you know, especially in particular the creatives, they didn't want to set out to make something that was, you know, not going to be good. Nobody in the creative field does that. Like, nobody intends to go out and have, like, you know, a bad performance or to, you know, play badly or to have their art not be, you know, received the way they want it to, but sometimes it is, and you have to, and the reality of the matter is you have to deal with it accordingly. You can't, like, you know pass the buck and say and blame somebody else and, like, you know, start a trending hashtag because you didn't get your way, right? Like, you gotta figure it out. And I think my biggest frustration with all this is that they have yet to do so.
Well, but I think, and you guys chime in on this, I think had this come out, this version, the Snyder, obviously an edited down 3-ish hour cut, because you could, you know, because that's, yeah, less slow-mo, take out some scenes, tighten some things up. This comes out November 2017. Very successful, makes lots of money. A lot of people like it. You guys agree?
Yeah.
Likely.
Yeah.
And then at that point, you're like, oh, good. Oh, then you haven't burned all your bridges with your actors, right? I mean, Ben Affleck's still making the Batman. Ray Fisher is still in the fold, right? I mean, like, all these things, Henry Cavill could perhaps come back without a CGI face, right, in the future. So, like, that's where it all starts. Like, the fever, the rage, the turns good franchises bad.
I think just a film example that comes to my mind when we're talking about all this is the, you guys know the Taxi Driver story? Almost rated X, this story?
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
Krauss knows his rated X films. He's like, oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I know that. Dirty movies have premieres? Taxi Driver. It was the studio told Scorsese, we're going to rate your movie an X because of all the violence at the end of the film, unless you slash your canvas, pretty much. Like, you know, Taxi Driver, masterpiece, right? You slash your canvas, you do whatever it takes, cut as many frames of blood and this and that, to make it an R rating. Otherwise, we're going to slap you with an X and it'll play at these B movie theaters and, like, it won't make any money, right? And Scorsese has just made this epic with De Niro and all the, you know, what Taxi Driver, what a cinematic masterpiece that was. So he had no idea what to do. He was in such a quandary until he came up with the idea of desaturating the blood so it looks less realistically red and more like a darker red that, I guess, turned people off a little bit less. And that gave him the R rating.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I was like, that is what you do, right? You find a, whatever anyone's thoughts are on the, you know, whether they like the Snyder Cut or don't like it. I think you find a creative solution like that to keep the
artist's voice. So Snyder needs to desaturate it. And
black and white. No.
That's the answer. I didn't know that. That's fascinating. Yeah. Because we all heard the stories back and they, like, oh, WB watched it and they thought, this is a nightmare. We could never release this. And you watch this, you're like, what are you talking about? This is the best movie you've made of this new batch, you know, at least to me.
Yeah, I was like, what was so dark and violent about this? Like, really, what was their issue? That's what I'm curious about.
If they didn't say that before BVS, why would they say that? This film is a much better cohesive film than BVS. And I can't believe, like, they let that happen. But then this one, whoa, slow down. I'm like, what are you guys talking about?
Well, I think it speaks to the reactionary nature of them, right? Because they were 100% behind, you know, Batman versus Superman, because they're just like, oh, this is going to make us bank because it's our two most, you know, bankable characters. He's like, we got this in the bag. And they didn't, because Ant-Man, D-list character Ant-Man, made more than BVS. All right,
did Ant-Man make more money than Batman vs Superman?
Yes,
I'm gonna look that up. Please continue.
Yeah,
so I don't believe you.
It's handsome. That's the only reason why.
Oh, the Paul Rudd factor. I agree.
So it's like, so you have that happen. And so as a result of that, like anything that happened afterwards, there's like, oh, well, we got to, they're full in backpedal mode.
Well, they handicapped themselves by cutting out 40 minutes of the movie.
There's that too.
I mean, 200 million more.
Regardless of, it might've been, Lance, it might've been more profitable because Ant-Man had a low budget. Yeah.
They made less, but they, yeah, probably. Right.
There you go.
And that great Batman v Superman barely beat Ant-Man. Okay, but seriously, WB shot themselves in the foot by cutting out 40 minutes of the movie. So regardless of like everyone's first impression, nothing like, you know, you never get your first impression. And you're like, well, that Lex Luthor plot didn't make any sense. And what was this? And what was that? Superman shoot those people? Like, I mean, that's what people are, they see the theatrical cut, it makes no sense.
Well,
and
so, then, well the extended one doesn't do it really any favors
it either. It adds a lot. I think it really improves the film.
It doesn't improve it. Well, yeah, it improves it from being like completely awful to just, you know, less completely awful. All right.
Cross, where are you on BVS these days?
I'd like to forget it.
Oh, there we go.
That's the thing about memories. You can't
forget them. So
about WB, like from the start, like Zack Snyder did Watchmen, mm-hmm. So they knew what they were getting.
Mm-hmm. So, well, no, I don't think they did because they see him do Watchmen, right? And Watchmen's a good example of what I was talking about earlier. Watchmen's the perfect story to do your whole. Zack Snyder's the perfect person to do something like Watchmen because he's into the whole like deconstructing the superhero mythology type of thing. I don't think that they thought that he was going to do that with these characters.
They saw Man of Steel.
no, like I'm talking about like prior to Man of Steel. I don't think that they thought that that's what was going to do. But again, like Man of Steel is a reactionary, you know, take from Superman Returns. Right? So they're just like, oh, well, let's go in the complete opposite direction. This guy did this whole thing. And like, and so he did Superman Returns and, you know, it's okay. And then he just completely keeps going, you know, in the direction that he goes. And they're just like, well, we didn't really intend for you to do that. Like we've wanted you to get to the point quicker with Superman, but Man of Steel kind of doesn't do that. And then, you know, BVS certainly doesn't do that. And this one, you know, kind of does, but not really.
Can we talk about how Superman's hairstyle gets worse in each movie? Can we talk about this? I do actually in the Snyder cut, his hair is kind of more Man of Steel-esque maybe, but I just hate the slicked down. I hate the BVS look for his hair. That's just my take, but that's my hot take. Nobody else? Okay.
I didn't notice that, but I noticed Lex Luthor's hair got better.
Oh, 1,000%. Addition by subtraction. But you know, let's talk about that. Lex had his best scene of these movies, and
love it.
And this movie, it wasn't a post credit scene this time, and it was tied into the then upcoming solo The Batman starring Ben Affleck versus Deathstroke. And I really liked that scene, and that's, you know, Lex Luthor on a yacht, bald in a nice suit, surrounded by people and drinking sand. I want that Lex Luthor. I don't want to see Edward Nygma hair Lex Luthor playing basketball, right? And feeding people Jolly Ranchers, right? So that's evolution of characters, right? But that's the thing, right? What was Lex going to do in the future, right? Because you can't go back to a normal Superman movie after this, right?
I guess this is spoilers, but not spoilers because we might not ever get the other Snyder movies. But like, I read that Snyder had this whole, you know, with the whole like alternate universe, Lois dies and, you know, all that stuff. Like I heard that Lex was really kind of the mastermind of all these events because he was supposed to give that information to Darkseid and then be the spy, like, you know, be the linchpin in Superman's demise by knowing everything about who Clark is. And I thought that was a really cool concept that it's like, he knows who Bruce is and his knowledge leads to the Deathstroke versus Batman movie, and then he knows who Superman is, so that leads to the Injustice movie, and that
was
really
Wonder Woman is because she has no secret identity. And okay, I just didn't really. I mean, I know that obviously Joker's role in the future, but so let's, you know, that's a good transition point. Let's spin into that. I was hoping that the Nightmare stuff would kind of come full circle and pay off, right? Wasn't really what I was looking for, but DeMonte, lover of Snyder. Is this what you wanted from the Nightmare sequences? Or
are you happy?
So the Nightmare sequence was like, I like them as Nightmare or as alternate realities of what could happen. Not necessarily. I knew he planned on going that route potentially, where the second film was going to basically be like The Empire Strikes Back, where the bad guys win, and the third film was that big redemption where the good guys come back win. I know that's what he kind of wanted to do, but I also just kind of like leaving it as a tease. Is this is what could happen if Superman goes down this road. This is why we must do everything to protect, you know, Superman and the people around him so this doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. I like that idea, the idea of this is what potentially could happen, this alternate universe. I like that idea. I like that tease. I'm not sure if 100% sold if they went that direction, doing the whole injustice thing in a film. As cool as it would be to see, I liked it better as a tease. Because, like, then, you know, people aren't angry over evil Superman. You know, right. they're not divided about that. You just get that kind of that what if, you know. And I'm glad that they kind of... Because I know one of the things that were supposed to be in this film was a Bruce Wayne and Lois Lane relationship. So I'm really glad that they reined Zack Snyder.
See, sometimes studio interference is a good thing.
And I'll say this. As a Snyder defender, I feel like for every 5 good ideas he has one that's questionable. And I think that was definitely a bad idea. So I'm glad that somebody stopped that from happening.
I think Lance would probably think the opposite, but I agree with you.
I think my ratio is closer. I think probably like for every 2, he has 3.
There we go. See, common ground, sort of. Rocha, man, do you want to see a nightmare feature like reality? Because I'm on the same camp as Demonte. I'm like, look, this is what we do in like time travel apocalypse. We get glimpses of things that we don't want to happen, and we don't spend a whole movie there. What about you? What are your thoughts?
I'm totally on the same page as you guys. I think that I would not want to see a whole movie in that style.
What if Superman were the villain, man? Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's to me, it would be like doing a whole season of Smallville when Clark is raised by Lionel Clark.
Oh, you know, I'm actually interested in that. Actually, not to mention it.
I mean, I think the comparison is like I think most of Smallville fans loved seeing Lionel back and seeing Clark raised, and like what would the world have been, you know, and like that dark universe and stuff, and dipping our toe in that, but not having like a whole season dedicated to it. So like that's the way I feel about the whole nightmare stuff. It's like, mm-hmm. I like seeing it could go in this direction, but like you guys said, how does the league stop that from happening and prevent it from happening? So we're spared the sheer nihilism of that mm-hmm. universe. Because I feel like we kind of got our empire already, for me, with BVS.
BVS, because Superman died.
Yeah, that was our dark night. That was the night is darkest before the dawn. And now we have the rising of the team. So I would have liked to have seen glimpses, but then to have gone in the direction of like, we only see those glimpses. And for the most part, we're in regular universe timeline, and we get to see more of like the individual solo movies and then come back for like team up stuff. But I would mm-hmm. like to have seen Batman and Deathstroke, see a solo Man of Steel sequel, see the different, you know, solo, like you said, Wonder Woman doing her thing with like actually killing gods, see those things, and then come back together for, you know, an even bigger threat.
So like kind of like how Marvel does it.
But I will say, I think I'm one of the few people who think this, I know, but I think the way that Snyder did it, whether it's Snyder or the studio mandate or whatever, to me, giving us the, in Batman v Superman, giving us a Batman without giving us a whole other, you know, Ben Affleck origin story, and giving us a Wonder Woman before we saw her origin, I thought that stuff was really cool. And I like the idea of just kind of like, these are iconic characters, we can kind of throw you into this and then piece together more about who they are. That being said, I can see why for a lot of people it was divisive. Like, oh, it would have been nice to get to know them before we see them team up. I totally get that perspective. But to me, they're so iconic. It's kind of like, we know kind of who they are already. It's cool to see, to just be thrown into this universe. And then you can kind of scale back and see more of what makes them tick.
But I see what you're saying. I do. And in theory, you're correct. But and I love the Ben Affleck Batman. He's my favorite, like I said, on screen. The problem is he's not your iconic one, because he's killing people and he's, you know, it's like, so you can't. But I grew up with Michael Keaton killing people. So I'm like, okay, I guess that's what Batman does. But one thing I learned is Batman loves guns. That's what I learned from the movies, by the way. But not to go back to it, but if Chris Reeves Superman popped up, I'm like, oh, well, that's the iconic Superman. Got it. But, it, you know, it's these extreme versions. That's why Wonder Woman works so well, because nobody has like a There's not like a clear, like, well, this is what Wonder Woman should be, right? But I see what you're saying. But coming off the Dark Knight trilogy, you're like, well, that would have been awesome to see this guy fight this guy, and he's established. But of course, that was never going to happen. So it's just explaining it to, you know, the layman out there. People are like, so is Christian Bale going to fight Superman? I'm like, no, this is a different Batman. What are you talking about? I'm like, ugh. And then you have to explain. It's exhausting. But I see what you're saying. They could have worked, and some levels it does and some it doesn't. But so Kraus, man, nightmare feature, right? They gave Zack Snyder millions of dollars and lots of time to specifically film these things. Are you happy they spent time and money on them?
I felt like this was specifically a troll on me alone. Like, this is all about trolling me. I just want to see a real Superman movie. Man of Steel was a real Superman movie. I just want to see another one. And I don't want to see evil Superman when you haven't gotten non-evil Superman. Sorry, I'm going to calm down.
I agree with Kraus. And because, so, and real quick to piggyback off of what Roka said, yeah, you can jump into, you know, to the deep end, so to speak, with like with the established characters, right? But then you got to do something with them immediately afterwards. And then that never happened. But anyway, back to this nightmare thing. So we get this, right? And it's like, what the hell are we doing? So with Superman, his arc in these movies so far, he starts off as being this like moody, you know, not wanting to do anything, kind of a dick, right?
Sounds like Smallville to me.
To dying. And then he finally comes back. And then immediately, we're going to evil Superman. It's like, where is Superman, right? Like,
but no, Lance, that's for movie 7 down the road. Okay. Yes.
Like, so you do that, and then you shoehorn in Jared Leto Joker, and it's just like, and you have like, ooh, Batman's gonna drop an F-bomb. It's like, why did you even have to release that information? I probably would have liked that if they hadn't done it, if because like, I'm not just some person who's like, oh, well, Batman can curse. I'm sure he does. He's an adult. Like, all adults curse. Like, everybody curses. All right. Like, walk into an elementary school, they're cursing too. Newsflash. All right. So that's, but like the fact that they, like, you know, they played it up as this, like, ooh, look how great and edgy and gritty, you know, Zack Snyder is. Get out of here with that. Right. And then the Joker's in there and he's awful.
That was his best scene though. That's your little Joker's best scene. Am I right?
Again, not a high bar to clear. If that is his best scene, then we have a problem.
How would, right, you have felt if Joaquin Phoenix was a Joker in that scene, Lance?
The same
way. I was just redoing a rewatch of that with my brother. It's a Joaquin Joker. But I think, I will say this, Suicide Squad's the only DC, the only DCEU, whatever we are calling it these days, movie that I did not like.
Common ground, everyone. Common ground.
Common ground. Bringing people together.
Wait, Kraus, did you love Suicide Squad?
You trolling me?
I'm probably the only one who has something semi-positive to say about it. I enjoyed the first 40 minutes out of a two-hour movie. I really liked the 40 minutes.
Ben Affleck's Batman is in it, so that's a plus.
Hold on, fair question, DeMonte. Were you awake for those 40 minutes?
To give the viewers at home some background for that joke. So we all of us went to go see Age of Ultron.
Multiple movies, yes. Multiple movies.
I fell asleep during that one with Lance and Zach and Kraus, and I fell asleep with Lance and Zach during Skull Kong Island, too.
Skull Kong Island.
I don't know how you sleep through that.
Yeah.
Did you fall asleep during
Skull Island?
Yeah, that's why I said that. Did you fall asleep during Amazing Spider-Man 2? Because that was fun. That's probably the most fun we had as a group.
No, because we stayed away to make fun of
having the knife into,
yeah,
laughing Ortiz.
Yeah, to Ortiz.
So that made it really entertaining, just watching cringe, then you guys just like stabbing him.
Oh, that's so good. He's like, this isn't funny, guys. Yeah. That was good. But DeMonte, what did you think of the Batman and Joker finally coming face to face in the DCEU?
I think it was cool. I mean, once again, it's a tease of, it's a tease, but it's still cool having them, you know, on screen, even though they shot it separately. I just know, there's more to it. I wish we would have, we saw that photo of like Joker Jesus.
Yes.
Where was that? Like, yes. What was that about?
Look, it's
Thank
one thing
God
to make.
That was not there.
It's one thing to make Superman Jesus. Don't make Joker Jesus, okay? Like, I will draw the line there of sacrilege.
look at this, you guys. Well, it's on a podcast, so it's I'm wearing my cross necklace right now. I'm representing, right? I'm Christian. I love the Joker Jesus image though, because he's Joker's the Satan of the DC, you know, and he's in the Jesus. It's like, it was so intriguing. My girlfriend, who doesn't follow any of this stuff, right? None of this comic book stuff. She saw that image and it reminded her of Baroque, some of her favorite Baroque paintings. And she started reading about Snyder and reading these articles. And she was like, "You'll be proud of me. I read an article about the whole Justice League thing today and I was interested." I was like, "Really?" She's like, "Yeah, it's actually like the imagery looks really artistic and really interesting." You know? So I just thought that was worth mentioning. Like that.
Hey, that is
provocative.
That is Zack Snyder in a nutshell. The imagery looks very interesting and artistic. So I mean, that's you got to give him that, right?
But calming ground.
But then you know, to just the fact that they spent time and money on what was basically like, "Hey, you want to see more of this? Give us more money." I'm like, I'm one of the people that I signed up for HBO Max because I wanted to see the Snyder Cut. I don't want to see that as a sequel, you know. And then you have stock footage from BVS of evil Superman. You know what's so telling to me about the DCEU Superman? They used footage of normal Superman from BVS as evil Superman in this nightmare sequence. They didn't need to change anything. They just made his eyes red. And that's it. I'm like, that's that's how it is, right? And I don't understand the black suit versus the red and blue suit in the future. Like, wouldn't he be wearing that? Who knows, right? But we did not need to spend time, money, and effort on this stuff, in my opinion. And I'll give him credit. At least they have Ezra Miller in his Iron Man Flash costume, who goes back in time and obviously and finds Bruce Wayne and stuff. But I would cut all this stuff out. Just for all, like, if I was going to re-edit these, I would just cut it all out because it doesn't lead to anywhere yet. You know, other than the visions that Cyborg sees, right? Because he's plugged into the Mother Box and the Apocalypse. Put that stuff there, but I don't need these 10-minute scenes, right, of this stuff, and just it's just a weird collection of characters. And I don't know what is it because of Arrow? People love Deathstroke now, Lance, I assume, or what? Like,
yeah,
because like it's so funny that the Arrow, the TV show, Deathstroke becomes super popular to Suicide Squad, and then the movie's like, "Okay, you can't use them anymore. We're using them." You know, I'm like, come on, man. Again, lots of lip service to the multiverse. But speaking of reshoots, these things do this movie such a disservice, because what is everybody talking about? This kind of stuff. When if they just wouldn't have put this stuff in here, we could be talking about the movie like the Justice League and all this stuff. And instead, these lightning rods of conversation and fandom, right? So we got the nightmare stuff, and then we have Martha Manhunter, which is terrible. Like it's so DeMonte, defend this.
I didn't mind the end scene, the very
I mean his entire presence in this film.
I don't mind the presence in this film. Like the thing with him disguising himself as Martha is just so I want to get to some real nerd UFO stuff.
All right, let's see it.
The idea that there's an alien who lives on Earth or doesn't live on Earth who is able to help out humanity through channeling things or through trying to influence them without directly taking action is something that exists in UFO lore. And I think that's really cool that they play on that in the comics and in the film too. I think in the film shows specifically that he's been very hands-off. But then he realizes, hey, you know what? Maybe I should actually start helping.
I would have realized that when Zod invaded the Earth 7 years ago, but that's just me. That's how I think as a hero. It's the retcon of it all, which is frustrating to me, you know? And Smallville's just as guilty, by the way. But it's such an awkward... Why would he impersonate Martha Kent? That's so weird.
It didn't make any sense. I was so confused by that. They should have left that out.
Because the world needs Lois Lane, too.
Yeah, but Martha Kent could have told her that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's debate Martha stuff real quick. Roka, did you like that scene where Martha turned out to be Martian Manhunter?
Okay, so that was one of my it wasn't like anything like a huge flaw to me or a deal breaker.
We found the other flaw of the movie.
It's not the presence of him to me necessarily, because even if it feels like a retcon, there could always be a like, well, he was secretly here helping him, we didn't see him or whatever. But the only thing to me was that moment was so awesome with Martha and Lois. And it felt a little cheapened to then every time you watch it, to know that it's really Martian Manhunter.
It felt like a real moment between these two characters, and then it was like, psych.
Yeah, and also Martha's one of my favorite, you know, just the whole, you know, Martha of it all, if we can, you know, that all that's the
Martha.
Martha, the why did you say that name? Yes, I personally, that's one of my favorite aspects of the whole, you know, the Snyder universe is how important Martha is to Clark. And I feel like that's something that we haven't seen in a lot of, I mean, we see it, you know, in Smallville, and we see it in little pockets of the other movies, but the emphasis is often the father figure. And to me, it's really cool to see the mother figure as someone who's really close with my mom like that. So it's like, it's nice to see that that kind of positive representation of the mother and son relationship. So that's the only reason I would have liked if it was just Martha and Lois, to keep it about the purity of those characters, and then mm-hmm. save that really cool Martian Manhunter reveal, because I like it at the end with Bruce, but I would just save it for there. Like,
well, it's, you know, like, and I don't know when it was intended, right? But it's like, they're like, well, we want to, well, first of all, he wanted to use Green Lantern, but they said no, which is, I don't understand if this isn't, if this is disconnected from everything else, why stop him from doing what he wanted to do, but whatever. So they switch out Green Lantern for Martian Manhunter. So then my thinking is they had to retroactively find a place to put him in, and like, well, I guess we'll have Martha walk out in the hallway and then turn him into, the general from Matrix Reloaded, and then I know his name is Swanwick. Okay, he's great. Harry Lennox is great on the Blacklist. I know who he is. Okay, but
yeah, but that was my other point of confusion. Was Swanwick supposed to be Martian Manhunter this whole time? Yeah,
of course.
Allegedly. Yeah, right.
No, okay, that's total bull. So,
are you effing stupid?
So first of all, in this you know, in this movie, like the Martha scene, like it's completely cheapened by the fact that we find out that it's Martian Manhunter talking to her and not actually Martha Kent. It cheats us out of a scene between those two characters who are important to Superman and his life and his story and everything about him. Okay, that's number one. Number two, to your point, DeMonte, yes, like, you know, like it proves that Lois Lane is needed. The world needs Lois Lane. Well, we need to do a better job of showing that, because they did not do that in this movie. Number three, this by showing this in here, this movie fails the Bechdel test, because it's not Martha Kent talking to Lois
oh,
Lane.
No.
It is Martian Manhunter talking to Lois Lane. Number four, for all the people who are talking about how, like, you know, Swanwick was Martian Manhunter the whole time, it's complete bullshit. And the fact that this is added in here does not change the fact that it's bullshit. This is just a reactionary thing. It's like, oh, the people have been saying that he's been the Martian Manhunter, so let's put him in. And so
but
they
see,
do
in,
it,
the, in the scene of Man of Steel, he gets up and it
no, he doesn't flinch, because he's a general and he's seen some shit. That's why he doesn't flinch. And why is he just now, after they saved the world from Darkseid, is he just like, you know what? I should probably help out. Where were you when Doomsday happened, bro? Where were you when Zod invaded, bro? And depending on how old he is and how you know, long he's been on Earth, where were you for, let's go down the line, right? Let's say he was here, you know, since like the 70s or so. Where were you in Vietnam? Where were you in, like, where were you in the Gulf War? Where were you when the Berlin Wall crashed? Where were you in 9/11? Where were you on all these things, bro? You weren't anywhere. So no, he's not the Martian Manhunter. Get out of here with that.
Shut it down. Every day he hears people crying for his savior, all right, and he has
and
to decide.
Yeah. And does nothing.
He didn't think about the greater ramifications of that. So in the Martha scene, that it's completely undercuts it. But then, what do you just have him show up at the end? As you have to have a scene beforehand, and that's why, in my opinion, they just should have cut both those scenes, because it was kind of your mother and father would be proud. Did you know his parents? Like, did you hang out with the Waynes? Like, I don't know. And then literally, like, it's Smallville, like bad Smallville level dialogue. Right at the end, where he's like, I've also been called the Martian Manhunter. And he looks in the camera and then flies. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't like it. I didn't like anything of all of that. And you just take those things out, instant improvement. So cut that out in your 3-hour theatrical version of Zack Snyder's Justice League, and we're in a much better place. And to think they spent time and effort adding these things.
Yep.
Like my least favorite things of the movie are things they added like 5 months ago. You know what I'm saying? So anyway.
Yep.
Although I agree that the I am Martian Manhunter line is the Smallville hokey bad, I guess that's kind of what I enjoyed. It kind of had that, like, to me, that flavor of, like, you know, when they'll do like those really obvious jokes, like in Smallville, where it's like a really, like, okay, like we get the reference, what, you know, that type of thing.
Are you made of steel?
Yes, exactly. But I guess it's just the nostalgia in me. Like, it may be like, oh, that's a small
I thing. Like the Martian Manhunter's character, but I'm sick of him being like, he was a secret other character and all these super, like every version we see, like Supergirl, Smallville, this, yep. He's always some like undercover other person. It's like, he's just good at
he's literally an undercover brother.
I would love to see. I mean, thinking about the new frontier, right? Darwin Cook's Justice League story. Mm-hmm. Let's tell that story with Martian Manhunter, where he's like, he gets brought here and he's a detective. Like, there's, you could actually do like a Martian Manhunter TV show.
That'd be really cool, for sure.
And explore this character. And now he's, I'm Hank Henshaw, you know, or whatever they're doing, right? I mean, Supergirl season one did it better, right? So that's where we are with that character. So I don't know. It's we have so much conversation about this movie based off things they added that never should have been here, in my opinion. And I just, again, WB meddling. I don't know why they didn't let him have John Stewart, because that's what he wanted to do. Or Ryan Reynolds, or even back then, like, I think originally it might have been Tomar Ray. Like, there was so many. But they cast and filmed an actor as John Stewart. We could have a live action John Stewart, but WB's like, nope. So bad look, WB. Bad look. So. Anyway, those are my main points of contention. But
may I just add something to that with that scene though with Lois? I just wanted to add that in my opinion, while we agreed on that should have just been a Martha and Lois moment on that aspect of it. I think whatever one thinks of Snyder's execution of Lois's characterization, that's one issue, right? Like the. Some people think she should have been more in the film, should have had more to do, all of that stuff. And that's a whole other debate. But I will say, in my opinion, Snyder pays real respect to the importance of her character even if it's, you know, not minimal screen time, all this stuff, but the importance of what her character means to Superman and his connection to the world. And we saw that in BBS with You Are My World and that being the sacrifice. And so, you know, I think that's a really key aspect. And to me, her dying in the whole nightmare thing doesn't take away from that, because we had Superman die and he's resurrected. And when he died, we saw how that negatively affected Lois, right? So if Darkseid was trying to take over Lois, he could do so. You know what I'm saying? So to me, it was interesting to see that Snyder, to me, really pays real tribute to the strength of the characters, in particular the female characters, the Martha, the Lois, the Wonder Woman, all of those characters, rather than it just being this traditional superhero boys club kind of thing. So I just thought that was an interesting thing to me, and I thought that was very well done.
Yeah, I mean, Krauss, for somebody who's not too hot on the DCU, what's your take on Lois and then how she was used in this film? Because this is a Justice League movie, right? So there's not much of a place for the supporting Superman characters, right? I mean, that's just how it is.
I don't expect her to be, but it was interesting. When that scene happened, I was thinking to myself, why couldn't he have done this more before? Like, why couldn't we have more moments with Lois and with Martha? Doesn't have to be the same time. I was pretty happy with that scene until it turned out, oh, it's Martian Manhunter. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, okay.
But, I mean, and then I think he said that this takes place a month after BVS. So, like, I buy that she would still be mourning his death a month in, you know, and because, I mean, she's your point of view character to the world's reaction to him being gone, right? On a very personal level, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean, when I first saw him, like, man, it's just Lois hanging out in her apartment, right? And I was like, but now I understand what they were, I mean, she's going through the cycle of grief here. She's bringing the cup of coffee every day, right? So I think that works. And she's back at it, you know, by the end, and is what, you know, catapults him to being Superman again. You know, she's what snaps him out of it. Bringing the big guns. it's so funny. All these scenes that are missing, I'm going to quote them the rest of my life.
Always.
And like some of these missing scenes that I assume were Whedon, like looking back, weren't that bad.
Agreed. So,
I mean, the film as a whole, it's a different story, but some of those little scenes of dialogue looking back necessarily weren't that bad. I mean, all the kind of corny, cheesy, like, humor was pretty bad, but, you know, like, the idea of having Lois as backup was pretty clever, I thought.
Right, because you cannot defeat Superman by conventional means, and it's an unconventional mean. And then also, you know, thinking of little things that kind of tie back on what we started with, you know, that when Bruce is saying, like, Superman was more human than he was, right? Like, yeah. That's very accurate to the character. It shows an understanding of Superman that's absent in a lot of other DCU things. I mean, just to be honest, right? But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And that's why I love Morpheus is Perry White, right? I'm Lawrence Fishburne. But there wasn't Mr. Perry, as he's called by Martha Manhunter.
Mr. Perry.
But there's not a place for him here. Although I've said this before. I'm interested to see what you guys, Roca and Demonte team DCU's take on this. I was looking for the Superman status quo to be reestablished at the end of this movie somehow. And it's not. And he's just Clark Kent walking around. I'm like, we saw the headline where everybody knows people went to his funeral. So how do you explain this?
I was hoping for that in the original, when we first got the announcement this was coming, I was hoping for that too. I was like really thinking, wouldn't it be so cool to see how, you know, an explanation for the Clark of it all and like the
if only a character who could shapeshift and perhaps you could use him somehow to be like, hi, I'm Superman and I'm Clark Kent and everything's fine. But, you know, there's no one on the Justice League that has those powers. So what are you gonna do?
But yeah, I guess my hopes for that kind of went out the window when I heard that it was gonna be like a kind of more of a cliffhanger kind of feel. And so once that became apparent, then I watched it on those terms and I wasn't like looking for that. I was like, oh, okay, like, you know, if there was another film, then we would get like into the Superman and the Clark of it all and the universe of Metropolis and all that probably. But I would have liked to for sure to have seen that. I think that would have been really cool. And I have no idea how you explain unless there's like, you know, as part of the mass civilian deaths from Doomsday, if they made it somehow seem like Clark was actually missing rather than dead, I don't know.
If it really has only been a month, they could do what they did in Death of Superman. Like, oh, I was just trapped underground in a bunker with food and water. And so did you need that, Demonte? Did you need them to reestablish Superman? Or do you, I mean, you're a Batman guy. What do you care? Right. You're like Zack Snyder.
I feel like there's so much other stuff in the film, you know, there's so much other stuff that's in there and developed. I think that was necessary. You know, I thought about it for like a second when he was Clark Kennedy. I'm like, oh, aren't people going to, and I'm like, yeah, and then I stopped caring a second later.
Krause, does it still bother you that not Jimmy Olsen got shot in the head in the last movie?
Every day I wake up and think,
who treated Jimmy Olsen worse, Smallville or BVS? I'm not really sure. I'll take a bullet to the head over a pike to the chest or whatever. God. Well, I guess that was Henry James, but that's its own conversation. So, Lance, any final thoughts on that then?
On that part?
Yeah.
Nah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we covered all the heavy hitters, at least, you know, what we can in this format, of this context. Is there anything anybody wants to bring up, anything on their mind that they wanted to share about their thoughts on Zack Snyder's Justice League as we wrap it up here?
I've said my piece.
But Krause, will you ever watch these movies again?
Man of Steel.
Oh, Man of Steel? Are you kidding me? When we became friends, I was like, I really liked it. And you guys were like, this is an abomination to all things Superman. How do, you know, and you're like, oh my God.
But I didn't realize how bad it could get. So
you didn't know how good you had it back in 2013, right?
Yeah.
I'll say this. I watched it 4 times already. Yeah, I was off that week.
That is 16 hours.
And I still enjoy it. You know, the more I watch it, the more I say, you know what? This could easily be a 3-hour movie. What would I cut? You know, there's these really drawn out, some of the fighting scenes are like 5 minutes too long. You know, we have that 15-minute, you know, screaming scene of Superman dying in the beginning. I mean, there's little things they could do to make it more concise and like a legit 3-hour film that, you know, the more I watch it, I would do this here and there. But I really think he did the characters justice, and, you know, no pun intended. Like I said, you know, from the cards that they were dealt and then what they had to do, you know, everyone kind of goes back to Marvel, but it's like, you know, not every formula works for everyone. They didn't have to go Marvel's formula. They went a different direction, and they should have just doubled down on it. In general, just kind of trying to piggyback on Ed, one more thing. Alfred in this film did a lot more too, which was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Just the fact that they reverse engineering Kryptonian tech to make Bruce more protected against these real world threats that would, you know, usually just annihilate him.
So he doesn't have to run and hide like he did in BVS. Mm-hmm. That's funny. I love watching Batman. Oh my God. I'm not getting trained for this.
Yeah, the little like character moments are something I really appreciate. Like the Alfred, you know, on that Alfred note, like Alfred and the tea and Wonder Woman.
Oh, I love that.
The skull of the tea. Yeah. That's why I want the Batfleck movie. I want to see more of Jeremy Irons as Alfred and Ben Affleck as Batman. So
I'm going to put this out there. Irons' favorite Alfred besides the animated series.
I mean, he might be. It's Keaton versus
Michael Caine is great. Goth is great, but.
We haven't really had a bad Alfred, you know?
Yeah, I was just about to say.
To be fair, I haven't watched Pennyworth.
Pretty great. I will not watch
Pennyworth. I don't think anyone's watched Pennyworth.
No, but you're right, Roke. I could easily call him my favorite Alfred and feel good about it. So, well, any final thoughts then, Lance, on this whole project?
Not at the moment, no, because we're going to do a commentary on it at some point.
We are. Oh, buddy, we are.
So... that's when my final thoughts will be shared.
Very good.
Stay tuned.
Roke, give you the last word on this, man.
To me, it was the comic books put to life. It was an incredible masterwork by Snyder. I felt like it followed through on the promises that he gave us in Man of Steel and BVS, and it brought us to this epic conclusion. Well, conclusion, I guess, is... But it brought us to this epic moment, I think, where we got to really see how each character was given really, to me, really the best treatment and the best characterization and respect. And whether one loves or hates or is in between about Snyder, I think it's undeniable that he's like a fan, like all of us. And he was making it as a fan, like he was making it as basically a fan with this huge budget to do what he saw as his ultimate vision of who the characters were. And he was paying tribute to each of them, in my opinion. And we really saw that. And even just, you know, to go back to, like, for example, the cyborg aspects of seeing his whole story drawn, like fleshed out, seeing his characterization, the tragedy behind his story, the hope of what we saw, where he came to at the end of the film versus where he started. I feel like that he was the most dramatic example, but you take that, and for each character, I think you kind of saw that as well, where you saw how just really getting to let the characters breathe and let their arcs play out instead of rushing them really showed us who each of these characters were in the way, to me, the best graphic novels do, where you're just flipping through and you can kind of go back, and it's okay if it's a little too long. You can just enjoy it and indulge in it, you know? And that's, to me, that's why it was such an enjoyable, immersive experience. It was, to me, one of the closest that I've seen to reading like a beautiful graphic novel with beautiful imagery, great characterizations, and themes that followed through from the beginning to the end. It was all of a whole. It was all one singular vision. And I just happened to be lucky that I really enjoyed that vision.
No, you mentioned, you know, comics brought to life. And it is funny because I'll call it the Age of Ultron shot. But I love the Age of Ultron shot that they have with the whole Justice League and the Batmobile, you know. And so yes, I know Superman's not there, but, you know, he's dead. So whatever. Clearly that posterized shot of them all, that's a wallpaper, right? You can put on your desktop or something like that. And yeah, I mean, ultimately I think about, like, why did I connect with this film and why did I like it so much and why did I rank it first? And, you know, it's what we're talking about, like the teamwork thing, right? It's like, I would wanted to see these characters in live action working together for like my whole life. And we finally got to see it. Smallville was as close as we got till now. That's what makes a big difference. And I think about, you know, the time these monster movies, you know, that we mentioned right a couple of times, Godzilla King of the Monsters, not Godzilla versus Kong, that's his own conversation, but I enjoyed it well enough. But seeing that movie was so cool because you got to see all these monsters, like from, like, I grew up watching these Toho movies, the Japanese studio that makes Godzilla movies, like King Ghidorah and Rodan and Mothra and all this. You see them like never before with big budget Hollywood special effects, and it's so incredible to see that, right? And that's why that's my favorite of the MonsterVerse movies, right? Because you finally got to see that realized, and here you finally got to see live action, you know, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Cyborg, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman all working together fighting Darkseid. I mean, like, come on, right? So to me, like, that elevates it for me. And yes, that it's not a perfect movie. There are some rough patches. We had some good times talking about it. But ultimately, guys, I think we had a real fun conversation here. Hope everybody can walk away feeling like they said their piece and communicate. And I think everybody has some great points of view. And what's funny, it's okay to disagree about this stuff. That's what's so great about stuff like this. That's why I like talking about it. So, because ultimately, these are fictional characters, to quote Ben Affleck from that Kevin Smith movie. So anyway. Well, cool, y'all. Been a lot of fun talking about Zack Snyder's Justice League. Krause, if people want to find you out there on the internet, man, all your hot takes, where can they find you?
They can find my hot takes on Twitter at Papa Ken.
All righty. What about you, DeMonte?
Mike DeMonte, that's my Twitter handle, but you go to my website, punkrockandufos.com, if you're into UFOs and cryptozoology. And my latest book, Stranger Than Fiction, should be right up your alley if you're into paranormal and pop culture and how they meet in the middle. So yeah, go buy my book.
Yes. What about you, Roka?
I'll also go with DeMonte's self-promotion there. You can find me at Neighborhood Watch Movie on Instagram. That is the superhero movie that I'm making right now. So those who are assumedly as big of superhero fans as we all are, it's a movie that takes those characters and grounds them in real life and deals with a lot of contemporary issues as well.
All righty. Lance, what about you, man?
You can find me at Sir Lance Laster on all of my social medias. You can find me weekly on the Nerd Party. You can find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. And you can also find me on the United Federation of Podcasts talking about all the things that make Arrow Arrow on Always Hold On to Arrow. You can find us on Twitter at Do Not Fail Our Pod.
No Green Arrow in this Justice League, but
yeah,
it's only 4 hours. You know, you can't fit them all in. So,
yep.
All righty. As for me, more on Zach on Twitter. For the podcast, Always Smallville with one S on Twitter, Always Phone with Smallville on Facebook. And send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again with one S. Well, this has been our sixth Snyder Cut special, but we all know that you have to unite the seven. So we're going to have one more of these. Tom and I will come back and do an end cap, an epilogue, if you will, to the six-part epic saga we've been doing about Zack Snyder's Justice League, and we'll talk about our final thoughts on it and put an end cap on everything. But what a journey this had been. Regardless of what you think about it, it was an event, like we've all been saying. So there you have it. But until next time, always hold on to Smallville. Hallelujah. 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 Always Hold On to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Chris Fuchs, Kevante Chillis, Darren Kirscht, Joy Deanberg, JJ Hodges, DJ DeWinna, Nathan Rothatcher, Casey Cochran, Nathan McKenzie, Jason Skipper, Steve Rogers, Joe Mikendo, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, John Curcio, Mike Franz, Dylan D'Antonio, Thomas Navin, Andrew Parker, James Lee, Jonathan England, Adam Sullins, Joe Michael, Mark Idzvapin, Alex Ramsey, Jason Davis, Patrick Bravo, Patricia Carrillo, Jacob Stevenart, Diana Bias, Corey Moore, James Bandini II, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Eddie Bissell, Jim Thomas, Nicholas Fansler, Catherine Caldwell, Will Hunt, Clonk Kant, Becca Zeifel, Jacob, Mariana Sachi, Tom Gerke, Nicholas Goso, Erica Flynn, Jared Gibbs, Anthony Anderson, Jasmine Magelli, Keith Falls, Lauren D., and Cody Thomas. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.
Dostoevsky!